Hola amigos y bienvenido a Fun with Cars Formula One Podcast, episodio 189 para cobertura de Mexican Grand Prix, Gran Premio de México. I am Jim Lau.
Burrito, quesadilla, tacos, enchiladas. I'm Robin Warner.
Your Spanish is excellent.
Thank you. Yes, I've been practicing.
Welcome everybody. I am super excited. We are both super excited.
It is episode 189 for Fun with Cars Formula One Podcast.
Ah, yes.
By the way.
Gracias. So we are very excited. This is another race, only one country away from us. We've got the whole North America covered now with Canada, U.S. Grand Prix. Now Mexican Grand Prix is back in action. It's a great time zone for us. It was a great race. The coverage, the atmosphere, the new circuit, the revamped old circuit, the whole thing. Anyway, we're really excited about it.
I'd
like to go to this race sometime. I've been to that track before, but now it's kind of, made a lot better in the last 2 years. And it was cool that the event has happened and Checo Perez, national hero, and even, there's plenty more to talk about for there. Real quick,
just a little bit more. Again, the man behind it was Tavo Helmand. He's the guy that put together the United States Grand Prix in Austin, Texas. And he's put this together, and he mentioned on a quick interview with Will Buxton that he's not done. He's got more things connecting himself even deeper into Formula One. And gosh, now that we've seen a second racetrack come to life in his hands, I'm more excited. I'm becoming a big fan of Mr. Helmand here.
Yeah, well, there you go. I think, the Circuit of the Americas project seemed like, in a way, not was never going to happen, but it was a long way off to build a whole new track from nothing, and to say, oh, it's going to be this whole sports complex and it's going to be this huge thing, and right now it's just farmland, but it's going to be a whole project. That's rare that comes together.
And we were like, they're not going to farm on it. That's ridiculous.
But yeah, so to, the revamping the Mexican track, I don't know, that's got its own series of challenges being right downtown where it is. And, the zoning laws and everything else, must be a whole big thing to deal with. So to overcome the different challenges, one of creating something out of nothing, the other to take the existing track and bring it up to spec for 2015 Formula One cars.
After nearly 25 years of going dormant, I think 23?
Yeah. And I think it was actually slated to be on the calendar last year and then wasn't. It was, it's pushed back to this year. But either way, the event happened successfully, and the weather even cleared up for the race and all that. So we've got plenty more to talk about Mexico. But first, I want to bring back to coverage from the United States Grand Prix and our man on the ground, F1 photo ace Jamie Price.
Take it away, Jamie.
Hi, Robin. Hi, Jim. Hi, Fun with Cars. It is Jamie Price calling you not from a paddock. I'm calling you from the Detroit International Airport, where I'm currently making my way to Shanghai after a very wet and soggy weekend in Austin. Unfortunately, I'm not going to Mexico. I'm heading to Shanghai to work for Toyota as the team photographer for the Shanghai 6 Hours, which should be great fun, but I'm a little jealous of my friends heading down for margaritas and Mexican food, which are two of my favorite things. But maybe it's better that they get a year under their belts with this Mexican Grand Prix, because it looks like the track could be a little bit of a mess. I've heard off the table and under the radar that the drivers that have done sim work on it hate it, and they think it's just crap. But hopefully the real thing turns out to be a little better and produces good racing, but only time will tell. But I wanted to kind of call in and give some thoughts on the U.S. Grand Prix. And the summary of it was, wow, I've never seen so much rain. And I don't know what bad luck I've gotten myself into with weather these days, but it's been a very long season for me. I've had the 10-hour Petit Le Mans car race in Atlanta, Georgia, which ended up being 10 hours of straight rain. I think we got 9 inches of rain during the race. And then I went to Russia the week after that, and we had, I guess, some just horrendous weather. It was not pretty, and I was really disappointed because last year was just so incredible as far as weather and light goes. It was just one of my favorite races of the year. And I made some pretty spectacular images that I'm very proud of. And this year was just absolutely terrible in every single way. I think the the real overriding factor of Austin was Hurricane Patricia and what it did to the sessions, and maybe even proved that maybe Kimi Räikkönen's right in that we should reduce the amount of track time the cars get, because when the teams don't have very much time to prepare the cars, it makes for really interesting racing. And you know, it definitely helped that it was changeable conditions, but when the mechanics and drivers and you know people back in various places around the world running these cars from computers don't have very much data to go on, I think it makes for really interesting racing in a lot of different variables and strategies, and kind of makes it what it should be. Personally, it would suck for the photographers because we have that much less time to prepare and get the quote banker images that we all rely on. I think you'd see a lot of the quality of like creative stuff go down a lot because we just wouldn't have very much time to do it. But I think we would all adjust, and I would be okay with seeing that happen, where the weekends are reduced and maybe we fly in on Thursday instead of Wednesday, and we kind of do setup and press conferences on Friday, and then Saturday we do practice and qualifying, and maybe even go back to a Sunday warm-up format, or you know, who knows, it could do a lot of good for the sport. It's certainly going to meet a lot of criticism, but I think the U.S. Grand Prix, you know, proved to us, as well as Russia did too, that this could be good, because Russia, we missed a session because of the diesel oil spill on the racetrack, and then we had Carlos Sainz's crash. So, you know, between all of it, we definitely missed an hour and a half of running. So I think that it could be good. Some of the other things that I kind of noticed were that Alexander Rossi's for real, like, you know, he's, and I'll put it out there that he is a decent friend of mine. I've known him for a couple of years now. I did a Road and Track piece about him with Connor Daly, and he and I have become pretty good friends, and we always see each other in the paddock. But, you know, I think he's proven himself with the results in GP2 up against some very stiff competition, and you know, he's done pretty well in the races that he's done with Manor. And I think, you know, a quote that I always used to hear when I was riding race horses is that you can have the best horse underneath of you and you may win a lot of races, but you still have to get that horse home. And I think that applies to this particular instance, where that he doesn't have the best horse under him, but he still gets the horse home. He, you know, he was nearly in points contention, which for Manor is like winning a race. And I'm very close with that team. I've done a lot of work with them. I know the team personnel, and they use the images that myself and the other photographers that I work with produce. And I think he's done a great job, and I hope that he has a drive with them next year. I don't know if he does. I don't know if he knows if he does. But I think it's just been great for the sport to have an American in F1. It's been great to have a U.S. Grand Prix. It now sounds like they're maybe looking at adding a second U.S. Grand Prix somewhere on the West Coast. You know, those are great things for F1. In addition to having, you know, a bunch of other talented rookies, and Carlos Sainz and Max Verstappen and Felipe Nasr, and I guess that's all the rookies. But you know, it's just been an interesting year as far as drivers go. And with Ferrari finally being kind of competitive with Mercedes, I think if they keep on the track that they're on, they are serious championship contenders next year. I was standing there in the Russian Parc Fermé after qualifying, and Lewis Hamilton, I don't even know if the TV feed picked up on this, but Lewis Hamilton probably did about 5 complete laps around the Ferrari while he was waiting for Nico and who was it, Valtteri, I guess, or Ricciardo, to get to the press conference room, or to get weighed out, and then they'd all do their little smiling Bernie says drive safe picture and then go to the press conference. But while Lewis was waiting for the other drivers, he did probably 5 complete laps around the car, just staring at the diffuser and the front wing and the side pods and, you know, all the little bits and aero, and he looked down, he looked inside it, he looked at the wheel. I mean, for a driver of his caliber and now a three-time world champion to spend that much time staring at a car, you know he's worried about it. You know he sees them as a future contender to, you know, his title. And he's said openly that he wants them to be, that, you know, he doesn't want to dominate F1 like he has. I think he genuinely wants to earn these championships. And I think Nico's kind of made him earn it, but let's be honest, Nico doesn't really have the pit bull competitor edge that Lewis does, where he'll do anything to win. You know, I mean, yeah, he may have cheated in Monaco last year to get the qualifying pole, but, you know, he's just kind of a softy, in my opinion, and Lewis is not. I don't like Lewis, but I think he's a better champion than Nico, and he's a better driver than Nico, and I think the only two guys that could really stand up to him in a championship competition format where they're all in equal cars would be Sebastian Vettel, Kimi Raikkonen, and honestly Daniel Ricciardo, I think. And obviously there's some other guys in there that would put in a good fight, but I think it's basically down to Sebastian Vettel and Lewis Hamilton, and a straight fight between Ferrari and Mercedes. And that's the way it ought to be. And I hope that happens next year. And I think if Ferrari continue down the path that they're on, with Arriva Bene leading the team exceptionally well in every single way that they need to be, and James Allison designing a great car, Kimi Raikkonen being a great teammate that can pick up points. He's been unlucky a lot this season, but I think overall it's a great time to be watching Formula One, especially as we head towards 2016 and 2017, which seems there are going to be a lot of changes to the cars and the speed of the cars and maybe the engines again. I think these are all good things for F1 because it's a little stale, in my opinion, at the moment. But yeah, it was what an exciting race. I'm glad that the fans got what they deserved after sticking it out. I'm glad I got what I deserved, because, you know, there's a joke the photographers have in that it never rains in the media center, and all the armchair journalists that sit in the media center or write about the races from home and have so much to say and talk about the rain. Well, they're not standing out in it. We are taking pictures. And it was miserable. It was cold. It was windy. I was standing at the Turn 1 tower during practice 3 after practice 2 had been canceled and qualifying was looking like it was going to be canceled. But I was up there looking at the cars as they come up Turn 1. And honestly, I was having trouble holding my camera still in the wind. It was just... it was unbelievable how windy it was, how wet it was. It just never stopped. I'm soaked to the bone after Petit Le Mans and Russia, and a very wet U.S. Grand Prix. And I'm probably going to throw a temper tantrum in the media center in Shanghai if we have rain at any point over there, because I think the weather gods owe me a sunny race at this point after a month of miserable photography. But it's certainly made for some interesting photos and some interesting sessions, so I can't complain too much, but I am ready for a dry race to cover. But yeah, again, I'm glad it was a great race. I'm glad the fans enjoyed it. I'm glad I haven't watched the TV coverage yet, but I plan to do that today on my flight to Shanghai. And you know, it was exactly what we wanted out of F1. It was dramatic to the very end, from beginning to end. Had great storylines, potential, you know, winners, different cars in contention and in the points, and you know, that's why we all love F1. And circling back to Russia, you know, similarly, I'm just over the moon for Checo. I work with Force India a lot, and it's just unbelievable that they got a podium, and it's so well deserved for that team. And I grabbed their chief mechanic in the paddock on Thursday in Austin and just shook his hand and gave him a hug and said, you know, seriously, this is amazing, and I'm so happy for you all, because they really deserve it. I feel like Force India is right on the brink of being very competitive with Williams, and, you know, if they had the funds to be, they'd be up there with the front runners, and they've proven a couple times now that they can be in the points, they can lead races, they can definitely make it to Q3 qualifying, and you know, that's why we love F1, is that you have these megastars, but you also have occasionally the guys that can slip into the points or a podium finish where you don't expect it, and they all deserve it because they've all worked hard to be there. But yeah, it's just great for the team. But I hope everybody's well. Thanks for listening, and I will check in again at the end of the season. Hopefully we can do a season review podcast. And yeah, good luck to the rest of the teams as they can finish off this year and head into next year. Thanks, guys.
Jamie, as always, thank you so much for those insights. So very cool that you got to be a part of that hugely emotional experience with Force India. And also, sadly, I'm pretty sure it rained in Shanghai a lot.
Yep.
So sorry.
Anyone who follows Jamie on Twitter, and I think will know, he definitely followed the rain, or the rain followed him to Shanghai. So hope the temper tantrum's going well, and that, you know, somehow that's working well for you. And then now everyone's saying, basically, just don't bring this rain to Sebring, whatever you do, because that would be lame.
Right. Now, I do want to follow up and say, yes, we definitely should talk in a future podcast, have you live. That is by far the best way to talk with you, interact with you. But dude, cracking job this year. Amazing photos. Thank you so much for your insights and your updates. And anyway, a lot happened this week.
It sure did. We've got a little bit more from the U.S. Grand Prix. We had some folks commenting on our Facebook feed to the previous show. We've got Nick Kraus, who has to disagree about the respect thing. This is about Lewis and Nico and throwing hats and all that. You know, did Nico have respect for Lewis at Monaco or at Spa when he bumped Lewis out? For me, there was nothing wrong with what Lewis did. You have to be aggressive in these situations. I think he's talking turn one here.
Yes.
End of the day, Nico is just a great number two driver, and that's it. He's been constantly beaten over the past two seasons in the same car. He's even getting beaten by Seb in a less powerful car. The throwing of the hat was just childish. Lewis sulks when he loses, but he's never done that. Nico just doesn't have the bottle for it. I wonder if he meant to say metal there. I don't know if having the bottle for it is a saying that we just don't know.
Yeah.
Autocorrect.
He doesn't have something.
I'm sure he'll get hate for it, I'm sure I'll get hate for it, but these nonstop mistakes and high pressure situations shows that.
So I have to respond and say, I understand where he's coming from, but the Monaco thing, Nico wasn't respectful, no, but Nico was also very clear. He said, clearly this win was gifted to me. I know that. I know I'm lucky, but I will definitely take it. And he was happy about winning the Monaco Grand Prix because it's the Monaco Grand Prix. I don't see how you'd be sad about that, you know? So yeah, it was kind of give to him. The Spa thing, they were both racing very aggressively. Nico hit Hamilton. Nico got the worst of it in terms of car damage. And Nico was the one that got his stern talking to by the team. Not to mention the huge amount of negative fan reaction that Nico got. Nico got plenty of dealing with that. I would put this move on par with the Spa move. It was very aggressive. Hamilton bumped into Nico. I mean, Hamilton hit Nico and did not give him racing room on the exit. And look, you have to be aggressive in Formula One, but you have to be that much more respectful and careful with your teammate. You just have to be. That's how this goes. You want to beat your teammate more than anyone else, but you have to do it cleanly to keep the team happy and to keep the team literally in one piece. You don't want the parts flying off everywhere.
Yeah, although I would have to say, and to put it another way, you can't argue with success. So pushing the boundaries, whatever those boundaries are, physical track limits, inter-team politics, you know, the whole thing, let alone stewards penalties and so on, you know, Lewis made it work, right? He was second place after the corner happened. He was in first place. He did not get a penalty. He did not get a fine. There was not a crash. So yes, it was aggressive, but it worked.
You know,
he
got through. True.
He won the race. He clinched the championship. So looking at it in that light, it's hard to say that it was really a bad decision because the team is still going. Lewis is still champion, and he's not in a place that, you know, Lewis is not going to get fired from Mercedes anytime soon. Something crazy, really crazy, would have to happen for that to be the case. So
yes.
It's just one of those things that Nico's going to have to deal with. Another comment we got was from Bernard A., and also about Rosberg and all that. And sort of he says, you know, now that euphoria surrounding the victory for Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton is yet to subside, he wants to add the following. Nico drove a brilliant race, but his mistake came at the worst possible time ever.
Amen. Very true.
He talks about this. You know, all the top drivers had made mistakes all year round. It was just bad timing on Nico's part. And to rub chili into injury, Lewis was there to pounce on it and make it count. And he goes on to talk about how Nico was just being a little bit cautious on the first lap because it was, and of course, this really wet race in the U.S. and all that. But what he says is Nico has to suck it up and go on and beat, you know, what he's challenging for now is to beat Sebastian Vettel for second place in the Drivers' Championship. And now that we're in the future.
Nico said, okay.
Yeah. And he does say, you know, Nico, if you're reading this, and maybe Nico was reading that because, you know, we don't know. Maybe he's on Subscribe to Fun with Cars.
I actually had Nico left a voicemail on my phone, and he read it, and he said, oh.
Oh, that's
win.
What I have
to okay.
Do.
Yeah.
Right.
I should be winning.
So the good news, to Bernard's point, you know, we agree that, you know, he did a good job. He made this mistake. As he said at the time, or this as he said later, it was a sort of freak gust of wind, which I guess all the drivers would be subjected to similarly, you know, the same wind. But, you know, just, yeah, the time and the place and where you are on the throttle and where you are with the tires and everything else is going to be different. So I understand. Yeah, it's just a mistake. Everyone has made some mistakes. Lewis has made plenty of mistakes. But it was really poor timing. But what can Rosberg do about it? You can't just go back and change his mistake, but to push really hard, maintain solid driving and being fair and being aggressive for the rest of the season. So far in Mexican Grand Prix, he has done just that and has held off Lewis Hamilton to win a race.
Well,
so,
and I mean, well he done. Did it. He owned Lewis Hamilton in qualifying throughout Q1, Q2, and Q3. Well, take that back. I think it was Q1 and Q3. But clearly, where it counted, he was ahead of Hamilton very much legitimately. He held Lewis off aggressively but cleanly, turn one, lap one, and that's after a three-quarter mile long straightaway. And he drove a brilliant race, and he was aggressive, and it was good. And now that I've seen it, I can go the other way and say Lewis was respectful to Nico and said Nico drove a great race, Nico did a good job. So it was fair play. Clearly, it's still an icy relationship. Nothing like it was in, you know, 2012, 2013 when they were best buddies and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we haven't seen that whole kind of friendly, let's hold hands, let's hug kind of we've been racing since we were little kids kind of vibe in quite a while now.
No. But
I'd almost forgotten about that.
I want to say thank you to both Nick Cross and Bernard A. For those well thought out comments, and also to everyone that like the episode on Facebook and all that. We appreciate that. Okay.
As you said, only a week since the last race, but there's been a whole lot of stuff that's happened. So in terms of, like you say, U.S. news and all that, the Haas Formula One team, the American-based team starting next year, has officially announced, now or officially confirmed, it was pretty widely known, widely rumored.
Worst kept secret, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Esteban Gutierrez will be driving for Haas F1 next year. So that's another Mexican driver, which, of course, was a big deal today with Checo Perez. And that's kind of exciting. Of course, Ferrari and Santander had that goofball commercial with teaching Seb and Kimi how to speak some Spanish and eat tacos and all that, which was kind of fun to see Kimi outside of his normal comfort zone. But anyway, that's cool to see that confirmation.
Related news, he has changed his name. This Esteban Gutierrez will now be known as Steven Gunther.
Hmm.
It's Steven Gunther. He's totally American.
Yeah. I know there was that pressure for Haas, a lot of people saying, oh, yeah, hire Alexander Rossi. That'd be great. American car, American team, whatever. And they said, no, we've got deals in place and we've got the support from Ferrari and we need to get a Ferrari driver and blah, blah, blah. So Americans are great and all, but hey, Mexican, next best thing.
Basically what Haas F1 has done, and they're bragging about this. They're very proud of themselves for doing this. The way, what it takes to qualify as a constructor, which is what you have to be a Formula One team, has changed and shifted over the years. And actually the requirements of what you have to build yourself has reduced. So Haas was like, oh, this is great. So every part that they can buy from a different constructor and still be a constructor themselves is what they did. So they're going to have Ferrari shocks, Ferrari suspension, Ferrari, obviously engine and transmission. just as much Ferrari kit as they can get is going to be on the Haas F1 car. It's still going to be a Haas chassis. It's still going to be a Haas, you know, bodywork, aerodynamics, everything. And it's still going to be Haas radiators, if I remember the article I read correctly. But it's going to be a lot more Ferrari components than you would initially think for a unique constructor. And I think part of the terms was that Ferrari said, okay, if we do this, give one of our development drivers some race, a race seat. And it basically went down between Esteban Gutierrez and Jean-Éric Vergne. And, you know, went to Gutierrez.
Right. So we are excited to see just the team turn some races. The other thing that's been talked about, of course, Haas runs a successful NASCAR campaign as well. And there's some talk of crossover, having potentially Esteban Gutierrez and or Romain Grosjean do some NASCAR, you know, have some seat time in the NASCAR vehicles and maybe do a race or two, whatever. You know, getting Romain Grosjean in the car, the schedules, this is, you know, we've looked at this, the schedules would line up for Grosjean to do races at Sonoma and Watkins Glen, two road car events for NASCAR. Sure. So as much as having a Frenchman in NASCAR would be very much Talladega Nights and Ricky Bobby style,
exactly.
That would be kind of hilarious, but hey, that could be cool, right? I mean, there's been some precedent, obviously, of former Formula One drivers and, you know,
I want Esteban Gutierrez to be dressed up as Zorro. That's what I want.
Zorro's not Mexican. That's Spanish. That's a whole other thing.
But it's close enough. No, I know. Listen, hear me out.
Okay.
The accent is close enough that most folks won't know. That's my point. That's what I'm getting at.
Are you deriding NASCAR fans right now? Are you saying that they wouldn't know that these are not sophisticated individuals?
No. I'm just deriding everyone equally.
Got it.
Because there are all kinds of flavors of NASCAR fans, sir. I think
those are the things that are always Mexican.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just going to stop digging. All joking aside, we're very happy for Esteban and for Romain Grosjean, and it's a smart lineup, although not the biggest emotional win that Haas F1 could have gone for with starting his new American team. It's exceedingly practical. We understand where he's coming from. He's got two drivers with Formula One experience. One of those drivers is quite immersed in Ferrari tech, and Ferrari, he knows Ferrari's methods and their know-how. So this is the right decision to get Haas off the ground. And with luck, we'll have an American driver at the Manor Grand Prix.
Well, yeah. So speaking of Manor, so far they have not confirmed any drivers for next year. So we don't know if Alexander Rossi or Will Stevens or Roberto Meri or anyone else has a drive there. But this week it was announced sort of last minute / unexpectedly that team principal and I guess what is it, lead technical director, Graham Loudon and John Booth have both resigned. And then later it was that another technical guy, Bob Bell, has also resigned. So that's like probably, you know, arguably some of the three most important people actually running the team. So not the team owner, because he may be the one behind moving things around here. But so far, at least as of Sunday afternoon, when it is right now, that's not been announced as to why. Interviews and stuff, which have been very short, said, oh, we have no comment on this, but we're still going to finish the rest of this season. But after that, we are not part of this team anymore. That's all we can say at the moment. So it's a little bit scary because, you know, Manor, these are the guys that brought Manor / you know, Marussia back from non-existence to being a team that almost scored points, as we talked about. Of course, they went through, you know, the Jules Bianchi, just the accident and the, you know, his later death and all that,
exactly.
Which is very tough and just super unfortunate. But you really hope, you know, this team especially with the Mercedes deal, should really start moving forward. And we've had Alexander Rossi in the car for the USGP, and that was really positive. And there's a lot of media around it, a lot of attention. They've got some sponsors on board with Flexbox and Airbnb, and it sort of seems like that's some momentum happening, keeping in mind that in the first race of the year, they didn't even have the equipment to start the cars in Australia. You know, that was the whole thing. And then in the next one, they got into qualifying, whatever, to almost getting points by the end of the year and really kind of having some momentum and a Mercedes deal for next year, for goodness sake. Now to have three top people from the team resign, it's definitely scary. And the fact that they haven't announced any drivers for next year, hopefully, maybe, like you said, maybe there's something amazing will be announced shortly to say, oh, actually, now it's going to be, you know, maybe Tavo Hillman or someone else. You know, there's new money coming involved. There's new expertise. There's some more people that are taking this, and it's really potentially a step forward for the team. But at this point, we don't know that. And so except being hopeful that this team that is really just a great underdog story so far and has not yet come to success in terms of points, but has really captured people's attention, certainly captured my focus. And I think it's great, especially for getting our boy Alexander Rossi in the car. Well, is just something we want to see them do well.
Which, you know, let's go back. Jamie Price saw Rossi drive, knows Rossi fairly well. And, you know, Jamie vouches for the guy and say, look, he's also a properly good dude. And that's very nice and refreshing and good to hear. And everything we've seen totally supports that. And yet again, the Mexican Grand Prix, he out-qualified Will Stevens. And I'm going to confirm before I say it out loud, yes, also finished ahead of his teammate. So he is, what is this now, 4-for-4 out of beating Will Stevens in Grand Prix racing.
Yes, and Rossi has one more chance to beat Will Stevens again, and that'll be in Brazil. But he is not going to be racing in Abu Dhabi because then that's the GP2 season finale, and that is still Rossi's priority for this year to finish that championship well. So it's back to Roberto Meri for Abu Dhabi in the Manor Marussia team. And then hopefully sometime in the next couple weeks, months, whatever, we'll know a lot more about what's going on at Manor. Will they be a team next year? And if so, who will drive for them? And will that be Alexander Rossi? We have no reason
to think that they won't be a team. But you're right. I hope that they are still a team. And I want to, I want to shift to some happier news.
Okay.
Aston Martin is linking up with Force India. And it's going to be, theoretically at least, it's not completely confirmed
right,
yet.
Right, we have to sort of say allegedly in front of all this.
With luck, this will happen very soon, that Force India will become Aston Martin Racing. Aston Martin Formula One Racing. First of all, they have to make sure the car's pretty, because Aston Martins are very pretty.
Right.
And second, I'm really happy. This is great news, because that means money for Force India. Jamie was talking about how, you know, they're punching above their weight, and how there are great smaller teams doing really well. It was huge that Sergio Perez was on the podium in Russia. It was, you know, Sergio did very well at the Mexican Grand Prix. And they're going to get a nice bump in money. And it's entirely logical. Aston Martin is slowly but surely switching to Mercedes AMG engines. And the Force India car is powered by the Mercedes engine. So this is just a perfectly happy, logical marriage, and I hope that it is fruitful.
Right, and Vijay Mallya, who of course has been the guy behind Force India F1, he's been showing up at Formula One stuff less and less. We haven't seen him as much around.
He was at the Mexican GP.
Right, we did see him this weekend, but in general, I think his involvement is kind of waning. He's, you know, yeah, done his thing, and I guess he's gotten what he wanted out of it. And in an interview, he said, part of the Force India name itself, and then it became Sahara Force India once they had investment from Roy Sahara, but he sort of says, we got what we wanted out of that. We wanted to just bring, you know, the name India into the forefront of sort of technology and motorsport and all that, and bring that up. And of course, we had the Indian Grand Prix, and now we don't anymore, because that whole deal came and went. But and maybe as partly fallout from that, but also I think a lot of his Kingfisher Airlines has done really poorly, and then there's been some sort of tax scandals and some various things. So Vijay Mallya may be happy to step out of the financial limelight a little bit if he can take a nice paycheck from Aston Martin, and then it sort of seems like it's win-win, because this hopefully, you know, any kind of financial problems or whatever don't affect the team, and so far they have not. And, you know, Force India has been able to do well, like we say, and be solid mid-pack and sort of moving up. So hopefully this is a graceful exit for somebody who doesn't want to be involved anymore, a graceful entrance for Aston Martin, who do want to be involved in Formula One, and the, you know, you can't argue with the company cars that these guys have got, right?
I certainly won't. You know, the Aston Martins are fairly exquisite, and they do have, I think, unique, equal to Ferrari from a completely different plane, a mystique about the car Aston Martin. Something about an Aston Martin is special, just like something about a Ferrari is special. That's undeniable, X Factor, blah, 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 whatever you want. So, yeah, the fact that Aston Martin is going to tie their name to Grand Prix racing, I think it's fantastic.
Right. They have done more and more, you know, they've always done sports cars, and it's great to see the, there's been Aston Martins, you know, in the high levels of Le Mans. They do, did they run a prototype this year? I know they did last year.
I thought they were GT cars this year.
Right. But it does bring up some opportunities then. You know, you wonder if Aston Martin, being the new team owners, would let Nico Hülkenberg go drive a Porsche for Le Mans. Of course, for 2016, it's not going to matter because there's a Grand Prix the same weekend as Le Mans. Turning that into a positive, maybe that could be an opportunity to say, oh, actually, you want to drive Le Mans? Well, hey, we have Aston Martins in Le Mans. So have it could be some beneficial tie-ups for the rest of the sports car career. And
yeah, the only problem with that is Aston Martins aren't Porsches. Unless there's some news I haven't read.
Right. So, well, he wouldn't... What? So, go drive an Aston Martin instead of driving a Porsche. What's the problem?
Well, Porsches would win...
But there's other classes than LMP1.
But the Porsche, the winning is a...
Right.
In other news, if you have a car and it's getting older, and maybe it's even going to break down soon, you need to be on the market, but you don't have the money or the interest in going and buying a new car. Do we have a solution for you? And we're excited about this. There is a future, almost confirmed, brand new used car dealership coming to Europe at Istanbul Park. Yay!
Need lots of Apexes on your left-handers? Well, come on down.
So, Istanbul Park, the place that hosted 7 Grand Prix, and I think in modern years, in many ways, the most successful Herman Tilke track that we had, is now it's been purchased by a company called Intercity, and they want to turn the racetrack into a used car dealership. However, people are fighting this, and in fact, representatives of the track have been talking with Bernie Ecclestone, and it sounds like there's hope that the Istanbul Park will come back and that the Turkish Grand Prix could make its way back to the Formula One calendar. I more than ever have wanted this to be the case. I, like many people, like the Turkish Grand Prix. The 4 Apex Crazy Fast Turn 8 is a great corner, for example. It's a great track in general. And I really don't think we need any more used car dealerships in this world.
Yeah, the used car thing is the weird part of the story. Because, of course, a major track, major sporting venue of any sort, changing hands from one big company to another big company, is not that crazy. That happens, and different investors come and go. And sometimes things start out as government projects and then get bought by private industries and whatever. But the idea of taking what is, at least in the last few years, a top-class racing facility with a track that should be in pretty good shape and all the facilities that go around it... and doing something that's not at all racing related, it just seems like, how can that pay off? You know, for, I don't know what the terms of the deal was and everything, but you hear a lot about Formula One, especially, you know, Bernie and the guys demanding super high fees for the racetrack owners. And the idea is like, oh, just make it up on ticket sales. And so the tickets have to be super expensive and the concessions and everything has to be just cost a whole bunch. A lot of it comes down to the track has to pay so much to get the privilege of having F1, you know, make a stop at their track and at their venue. So it seems like of all the things you could do, Formula One, a lot of these places lose money on this. I mean, the USGP, just to talk about that again for a second, said this was a terrible year for them through the combination of the really, really bad weather and then also the Mexican Grand Prix stealing a lot of their thunder because there was a lot of people coming from Mexico and the rest of Central America to Texas to watch Checo Perez and watch the race and all these things. So they said, oh, that was a 1-2 punch. And honestly, I think it's probably more the weather than the Mexican GP. And I guess that would, you'd have to look
at... Well, I'm not sure. I mean, a lot of Mexicans came up for the USGP, at the very least, the inaugural year that we were there.
Right. Although, I mean, I guess you'd have to look at ticket sales before the event and how far in advance this whole hurricane,
I mean,
you would know.
Zorro was there.
Yeah. Good. Let's bring that back up.
Oh, why don't we?
You know, because I'm imagining if you were thinking about going to the race and it was a week out and you're like, man, this weather... there's this hurricane happening. We're getting torrential rains, and there's no way it's going to be a beautiful sunny day. We heard from Jamie how soaked to the bone he got, and to pay, you know, rather than having it be your job and you have to deal with it, to pay good money to go sit in the cold, windy, rainy area just to watch these cars go around more slowly because it's cold and rainy. I can imagine a lot of people that were considering going to the race decided against it. That's more of a last minute thing. But either way. It seems like, for back to Turkey, that you could do, it seems there's so many other race series out there. I mean, of course, there's GP2 and Formula Renault and these different ones. There's sports cars, touring cars, all these kind of things that, okay, maybe Formula One itself is exorbitantly expensive, but you've got this great track. I think it'd be great to see WEC or World Touring Car or any number of other series. You know, they've had motorcycle events there, MotoGP, I think, and some others. So it seems like to say either it's going to be Formula One or it's going to be a used car lot is such opposite ends of the spectrum that, or maybe it's not. It seems like, you know, a lot of money to pay for something that's not going to make you a lot either way, but maybe they could just, I mean, a used car lot does not need to be the size of a giant whole Grand Prix track. Otherwise, that's going to be an amazing used car place. If that's all right. The selection you have, or maybe you get to test drive your car at the place, in which case, maybe you should go to Turkey and drive some used cars. Maybe. I don't know. But, so the whole used car thing is just really strange to me, but hopefully, yeah, they can come up with some deal. It would be cool to see Turkey back on the calendar, but as has been talked about, right now there are 21 races on the calendar for 2016, including the new one in Baku, Azerbaijan.
Which is during Le Mans.
Which is, yeah, same day as Le Mans. So it's not going to happen for 2016. In 2017, I don't think any of these other races are scheduled to fall off, but what keeps being talked about is, like we talked about earlier, potentially a new race in North America, and... You know, if there's other markets and
some
other
races have to fall off.
Right. Something's got to give. But the ones that we keep hearing about are some of these classic races. Oh, Silverstone, you know, maybe we won't have a race there and all that. And
Monza. Monza right. was what I mean. Right. Yeah.
And as cool as it would be to have Turkey back on the calendar. Not at the expense of Spa. Not at the expense of Monza or Silverstone. So, right. You know,
but at the expense of China.
Eh. That's such an important market, though, for just all the brands. And all
I know,
stuff.
But not many people were there.
Yeah, but it's not about the people at the race. But anyway, that's all part of what's got to happen. Is Turkey that important of a market? Probably not. Is Azerbaijan that important of a market? That's a good question.
Well, I mean, look, and I should clarify. I think the way it was sorted out is actually going to be a later race, so that the racing actually will not overlap, but they'll be right on top of each other. Like, as the checkered flag flies on the 24 Hours of Le Mans, the green flag drops while the lights go out for the Formula One race. So
if Nico Hülkenberg has an early retirement in the Grand Prix, maybe he can get into a supersonic helicopter and get right to Le Mans and then get... No, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. So nope. Yeah, for fans at home, that's okay. But for just the...
for the general coolness of racing, right?
Well, coolness of racing is one. But think about, you know, like our boy Jamie. You know, think about all the media, all the photographers that are normally covering different events. You know, right now he's at a WEC race. He does US races. He does F1. He does other things. So there's a lot of people like him that they're hired for these different events. And so now to have two separate teams of people, let alone drivers, let alone, you know, just all the infrastructure that goes around these racing events and the marshals and all these kind of things. It just seems there's been a longstanding, I guess, kind of a gentleman's agreement, because now it's been broken, but agreement within the FIA to say Le Mans is its own thing, and that's not going to compete with a Grand Prix, and the lesser races they're not as worried about, you know, the smaller formula, you know, but in terms of top level racing, this has been a thing. So this has been described as another power play by Bernie Ecclestone to say screw you to the FIA, to say I'm going to schedule a race when I want to and deal with it. So it's, man, I don't know, maybe this is just more Bernie being Bernie, and when that guy sort of finally retires or dies or something, that things will get a little bit more sane. But for the time being, it is what it is.
It is a big question mark, and the man is now 84. So, yeah, who's to say? However, as you can tell, a lot went on this one solitary week, but there was, in fact, a race. We did actually kind of discuss right off the bat in response to Jamie. Nico Rosberg didn't win the race. He did do it completely on his own merit. He had Lewis Hamilton pressuring him the entire time. He even had a yellow flag bunch the field up. He held on. He did everything really well. I say, hats off to Nico Rosberg. You cannot. It was flawless.
Hats off. Throw it at him. He'll throw it right back at you. And...
And he will keep the sombrero that he was given, the Pirelli sombrero.
Yeah.
Those were a tiny touch over the top, I'm going to say, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this was Austin 2012, when they did the Stetsons, and then that was sort of, everyone said, oh, that's so lovely, that's amazing, and that's great. And they said, oh, it's a really special race, because it's the first time in the U.S. for a couple of years, so, oh, for Mexico, sombreros, but... Yeah, and then the three guys on the podium. I mean, Valtteri Bottas just doesn't look right in a sombrero anyway.
No, Finland,
of anyone.
Finland and sombreros just don't.
It's
I would say
not a common thing.
Not
a
yeah.
And
are there like sombrero like sauna versions of a sombrero? Maybe.
And then, you know, then the three of them, I don't think ever had their the sombreros on at the same time, because then Nico was sort of messing with his and didn't want to put it on.
I don't think the three of them could have all worn them at the same time and also been on the podium.
Right. there's a tricky balance to strike there.
Yeah, yeah.
So the whole idea of the like, oh man, look at these great photos of the three guys in their sombreros and three amigos or whatever is like, that's probably not going to happen because
of
the timing.
And also the amigos, not so much these days.
Yeah. Although they were, I mean, now Lewis can relax about the championship and they didn't have any crashes this time. So they were amicable. It seemed like, you know, handshake in the post race and whatever. But yeah, amigos, maybe not. But and then
like
Nigel Mansell,
professionally amicable as opposed to friends.
Right. And then Nigel Mansell was just sort of
Viva Mexico!
Just, yeah, awkward
and
old on the podium.
Well, he did say Mexico. He didn't.
The first time, although not the last time. But,
well, there you go.
Yeah, and just, you know, yeah, not a brilliant podium interview, although far from the worst.
Yeah. I can't believe. I still think I'd say it's George Lucas.
Yeah.
Was the worst one.
Yeah, at Monza, of all places. Oh, Monza. No. He's like, wow, what a race.
Oh, my goodness.
It seems so weird with all... I mean,
No. It was not Italy. It was Austin. He was at the USGP.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
Don't be crazy. Because remember, he's
no,
like,
it was Elton John at the USGP. That just happened.
You're right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, don't be crazy. Come on.
You're crazy. Yeah, I'm
in his Adidas jumpsuit or whatever.
Oh, dude, my God. It's like George Lucas.
Of all the money that's spent and all the PR and, you know, knowing that this is one of the most watched things in the world except for the World Cup, it's
how
like...
How did I confuse Elton John and George Lucas? Hold on. Let's talk about me for a
moment.
You've
got some reflecting to do, after today's show.
I do.
But the fact that they then, after this race and this whole thing, I mean, maybe they know the TV figures and they know that the moment the checkered flag flies, everybody tunes off. So who cares who's on the podium? But, like, someone in charge of all these things in the corridors of power must know that these podium interviews are terrible. And yet, every time, I mean, okay, Nigel Mansell is a driver, at least. He can ask a sensible question.
But
he was just kind of confused about the format and the timing, and he sort of talked to the one guy, and then it, you know, wasn't speaking loud enough that Rosberg could hear him. Then he went back to Rosberg and said, oh, wait, no, actually, I got to talk to Bottas. I forgot to talk to... Like, it was just kind of like, okay, he wasn't super versed
no,
in the
No, there's definitely,
the
like, you see that when, say, Eddie Jordan, who's at least at this point practiced in it, or who's the German reporter that has done a couple of...
But the RTL guy, yeah, the German sportscast. Or David Coulthard. I mean, these guys that have been working in the media and as you know, presenters, they know what's a sensible question to ask and what's not. Although every once in a while, they try to make their own... try to talk about how much they know. So they ask this really long, awkward question that's not really a question about, you know, that time when you had the turbo and the thing happened and then the other thing happened and your DRS was... And they're like, yeah, that was a great race. Woo! Woo! You know, it's like, that's not a good question.
No,
so
you're right.
There's definitely a balance to figure out, but... but how is this still happening? The whole celebrity interviewer thing. I don't know.
Right. We'll see. It'll be interesting to see what next year brings in terms of that. The format of doing it right on the podium, I get that part of it.
And speaking of podiums, the U.S., the Mexican Grand Prix podium being in the Foro Sol in the baseball stadium was excellent. That was a super cool vibe. Because everyone else, you know, normally, of course, it's right in the pit lane, and you've got some spectators right there. But to have the podium ceremony and the top three cars
and the
right
huge
there,
stadium
and
right
the
there,
whole stadium around you, and all the fans, and everyone's cheering. I mean, everyone going, Nico, Nico! Like our presenters were talking about how much of an ego boost, especially after last week, that must be to just have that vibe of humanity and everyone screaming your name and all that. That's got to be wonderful. So, yeah, for him to come back from last week and have this great podium, that's cool. And it's great. Like you say, you know, so much... thought goes into this, and then yet you have these weirdo presenters or people that, you know, they had to have a rehearsal or something to, you know, it's like, you don't know who you're going to be interviewing, but here's how you should do it.
I think, you know, they use the name to carry it a little bit, you know, and honestly, as time goes on, I never thought it was that bad, but it's just getting... Arnold Schwarzenegger, really, pretty good.
Not a bad
one. You think about it.
In the grand scheme of... I mean, that guy knows public speaking, and he's done so many interviews and all that, like,
And Lewis Hamilton said, oh, I thought you'd be taller.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, I'm not wearing my high heels in an Austrian accent. That was fantastic. I'm just bring back Schumacher. That's what I'm saying. All right. Well, we have to go back in time again because it was a fantastic podium, the whole ceremony. This is the first time they've been to this race in 23 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first time that anyone's used this track. Like, what major series since IndyCar was there, I think it was 2007 was the last time they were there.
Yep.
And it was a different configuration. It was a longer configuration.
Slightly, but yeah.
And it was actually, we happen to know, that it was a Penske car that had the lap record, and it was a 123-something.
123.558 was Champ Car qualifying record, which was slightly faster than the race record, which was actually held by Robert Dornbosch and a Minardi Team USA Champ Car.
Yes.
But yeah, so November 2007, Will Power did a 123.558.
And that's against Nico Rosberg's 119.480. But again, different layout. The Champ Car track was longer and configured differently, and of course different payment, and on and on and on. Very different place.
Right, but also the previous Formula One race, right, 1992, had the qualifying record was Nigel Mansell, a 116.346. So that's 3 seconds faster. And, you know, I don't know what to say about that. If these cars, you know, I don't think they were as fast. I guess, were they way faster in a straight line? Because we've gotten so much better technology since 1992. I mean, I guess that Williams had some trick suspension and all that, right? But man, I don't know. The we did not set a new lap record, but...
No. We did set a new lap record because this is unique and new and different track. Enough. Don't confuse those two, right?
Oh, I know it's different. So in 92, they did around the whole Peraltada, the whole oval section. They did not go through the baseball stadium, which is basically a really big chicane. So that's why that lap is so different. The overall lengths are very similar, but in the old one, they did not go through the baseball stadium.
Right. Now, in the Champ Car race,
they
did go through it, but it was configured differently.
Right. It was more of just a squared-off corner rather than now it's a, you know, rounder kind of zigzag sort of deal. So interesting to see the different lap records. And, of course, you can carry so much more speed. I mean, the old layout... it's really cool, but it was super dangerous because, of course, it's this oval, except you don't have, it's like a little section of an oval, but you don't have any visibility through the corner because there's like, you know, there's grandstands right there. So there were lots of crashes there. I mean, other series, they run NASCAR Mexico, they run other sports car series. I've actually been to this track a couple times. I've set a couple laps, but we had a chicane set up.
What is your lap record?
You know, I did not have timing equipment going at the time, which is all for the best.
To the nearest hour. Right.
To the nearest hour, one.
Very good.
Rounding up if you can't count zero. I mean, it was definitely a dangerous corner. It was sort of cool in terms of it's a ballsy kind of thing to be able to, you know, get around this corner. But in the name of safety and all that, yeah, not a brilliant thing. But the track is right downtown. I mean, you can see from some of the onboard shots that if you go, you know, 100 meters in any direction from the track, you've got city streets, you've got other buildings, you've got other companies and all this. It's not a park area like, I mean, it is a park in its confines, but you couldn't expand it really in any direction. You know, it's kind of a weird shaped track because it has to be, because that is the area that the track lives on, unless you added some fiddly middle bit. But in the middle, like, of course, on the one side, it's a baseball stadium. So when it's not being used as a racetrack, there's baseball and stuff happening there.
That's incredible.
A lot of the other inside, there's a bunch of football fields in the middle. Like if you're going along the front straightaway,
this is soccer, football.
Soccer, football.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I guess you could play either sport on the same, you know, grid, but it's the size for, I don't know if it's official size. It doesn't matter. Big green areas with grass and white lines painted on them.
The non-American football, the big football.
Yes, whatever. Yes.
Which ironically, I don't think the ball is any bigger.
No, this is not what is important about this point.
I thought it was. No, that's very cool. I think... Not only is it a very fixed base, it's right in the city, it's also a mile and a half above the ocean.
Yeah. And, of course, that's there was a lot talked about with the thinner air, meaning 20% less downforce. I don't know for the other teams, but I did see a tweet from Mercedes saying they brought – this is the same rear wing they used in Monaco, or the same design at least.
Which is incredible.
Which is crazy seeing, you know, how much of a faster, more flowing circuit at least parts of this track are. That they would want that kind of downforce. But they're still so much faster in a straight line because it's just thinner air. And, of course, the turbos the engines are going to be down on power as well because of the thinner air. But the turbos do some to counteract that.
The turbos help mitigate that issue. And the electric assist, electric does not care how thin the air is. So that is something that is...
So they're going to be slightly down on power, but not...
Right, but that's a reason to be happy about hybrid. And to your point, I believe it was Felipe Massa and the Williams breached 226 miles an hour briefly.
I think 227 was even talked about.
Well, wow. Before on the binders into turn one.
That's cooking it.
That's a good number.
I only got up to 140, although I didn't have a helmet on, which was interesting because Mexico. This was in a 911. But anyway, That's not what's important here.
With your 1 hour lap time.
Hey, you know what? That's to the nearest hour. Come on.
I would have definitely said 0 hours. That's how you know I'm like a true competitor.
Well, I was trying to round to the nearest.
Yeah, see? It's exactly. Not, yep. Engineer.
I'm not very fast at driving
either. Anyway, there were other drivers on this place, namely Sergio Perez, who finished eighth, and every time he made a pass, seriously, over the engines, over the announcers, over everything, you could hear the fans cheering. That was the most lively, interactive fan base above and beyond Italy that we saw this year.
Right. Well, I think a lot of that is going to be, you know, pent up, you know, demand / just respect for Mexican drivers and respect for Formula One. I mean, as soon as they announced that there was going to be a Formula One, return to Mexico, I believe
Nigel Mansell said, "Viva Mexico!"
That seems to be his one thing. We're talking about, and it's the same thing I've heard about South Africa, which has yet to return, which would be another cool one. Is just that, like, hey, the moment they put tickets on sale, they just, you know, people just know they're going to get sold out because there's so much love for this. And yes, the Austin race is a possibility for some people, but for a lot of people, you know, flying, doing a whole flyaway to another country, especially to America, which has some pretty strict requirements for visas and all this kind of stuff, is just not an option. But there are so many people that just love the sport, and they're one of these countries that can really get behind an individual and say, man, this is our guy, and, you know, Checo Perez, and, like, let's really, really focus on this and get passionate about it. So, and that was the case. As soon as tickets were on sale, they were sold out very, very quickly, and they had a couple of the phases of tickets that came out, and we had, you know, really, really good crowds, and the whole country, but of course, you know, this whole venue was excited about it. And there were a couple issues. I mean, because it's right downtown, there's only so much you can do about traffic and all that. Mexico City has pretty infamously bad traffic because there's just 22 million people that live there, and only so many.
They said 21, but I mean,
since then it's actually gone up by a million.
Okay, all right, yeah, I forgot.
That's part of how it works. So it's a super huge, you know, metropolis, you know, giant metropolitan area. So yeah, getting to and from the circuit is going to be difficult. And I guess we're actually not too far. The track is not too far from the airport, so helicopter traffic and stuff may be tricky in its own way. So, you know, that's kind of the downside. But the upside is there's so many people that are right there. I'm sure people are on rooftops all around the area just watching the race, listening to the cars, and hearing every time Checo Perez went through the baseball stadium, you know, hearing the crowd just go nuts for that. It's just got to be a great thing. So to hear all the, I think, generally positive reviews once the driver started to get some rubber down on the track, the whole thing was at the beginning was it was super slippery, but once they got some grip, they said, man, the atmosphere here is great, and the Mexican people really just seem to love the sport and love that it's back in Mexico. So I am, if you couldn't tell, super positive about the Mexican Grand Prix.
Well, and besides, you know, taste of the race, I mean, let's give it up where it's proper. That is one of our favorites. I, you know, like I said, it even in the last podcast, this even edges out fish and chips, the British Grand Prix, ever so slightly, I have to say, but it does edge it out. In fact, big shout out to Valtteri Bottas for getting on the podium. Not, as we said before, rocking the sombrero too well, but a brilliant job. Again, he had a run-in with Kimi Raikkonen. This time, it's a little bit more debatable about whose fault that was.
Yep, and those debates are raging as we speak on the internet.
And the FIA officially ruled that there is no penalty going either side, that it was a racing incident, which I have to say is a tiny touch surprising, not because I have opinions about it should go one way or the other, but because the FIA has been so reactionary to these kinds of incidents in the past that I'm surprised that they didn't go for it this time around. But either way, Valtteri, obviously he kept going, which is surprising because his front left hit Raikkonen's right rear and broke Raikkonen's suspension, and his car was okay, and he could continue on and get to the podium very well. Also, speaking of Raikkonen and Bottas, they have swapped positions. Valtteri Bottas has moved up to fourth in the Drivers' World Championship, 3 points ahead of Kimi Raikkonen, now fifth. So, two races to go, that's actually getting pretty close. With Brazil, I think Brazil is going to favor the Ferrari over Williams, but I don't know about Abu Dhabi.
Well, if their cars finish, I mean, we somehow haven't talked about that yet with Ferrari, but a double retirement for Ferrari, and the first time that's happened since like 2006. But it was, you know.
But that, both of their drivers got hotheaded.
Yeah.
That's rare for Vettel.
Right. And I think there was even, I don't know, I didn't see the official source of the quote, but there was a tweet I think was legit, basically where Vettel got on the radio and said, you know, guys, I did a, you know, I'll censor it for now for the families. I did a poor job of driving today. Sorry. But he basically just acknowledged, I didn't do well. And that was me. Raikkonen had some more, you know, oh, this, you know, what's going on with Bottas? This doesn't seem right and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I don't think either of them is calling out for, especially not Vettel, is not saying, oh, the stewards get involved, penalize someone. It's just kind of like, yeah, that didn't go well. But both, so this, now Rosberg, of course, takes over second place in the championship from Vettel with, of course, 25 points to zero. That's the biggest swing you can have. And then, like you say, Bottas moving ahead of Raikkonen. So really a poor day for Ferrari. And yeah, so hopefully they can come back. Hopefully for Ferrari fans anyway, they can come back and do well in Brazil and Abu Dhabi. And there's no reason to think they won't be able to do well. But man, this weekend especially, it was just, I mean, Vettel was just driving desperately, which is, I don't think something we've ever really said. I mean, he's had, you know, if anything, he's sometimes, you know, when the Red Bull just had the right car at the right time, was able to just coast out and do really well. Every once in a while, he would have some problem and have to start at the back or get pushed to the back at the beginning of the race and have to fight his way through. But these desperate moves and sort of lap after lap and, you know, just making these really kind of amateur sort of mistakes. I don't know if it's just the lower grip surface and everyone else was able to get to grip, just deal with it better than he was. Yes. Or what. But it's really weird because he's been a solid driver all, you know, even up through the U.S. Grand Prix, and yet somehow in Mexico, it just all kind of fell apart for him. So,
which, you know,
really strange.
We'll talk about that a touch more when we get to predictions. Very good job for Daniel Kvyat, who was humming along. He was in the third spot for a long time. He just overall, finally, after that yellow flag, which bunched everybody up, could then not hold off Valtteri Bottas and Mercedes power down that long front straightaway with the help of DRS on top of everything else. Although Bottas might have gotten it done before DRS was involved. The Red Bulls had the edge on Williams in terms of agility, especially in the lower speed corners. But the Williams is a rocket ship in a straight line. And as we mentioned before, the Williams were actually the fastest cars at the circuit, unfortunately not also the quickest. But Daniel Kvyat finished ahead of Daniel Ricciardo. He was in fourth, Daniel Ricciardo in fifth, so a very strong result for Red Bull, which helps them out in Constructors' Championship to push them even further into fourth more solidly. Nico Hülkenberg actually finished ahead, but we did not see him once. It was a very quiet day for Nico. He finished ahead of his teammate Sergio Perez. But another solid double points finish for Force India, solidifying their position as fifth in Constructors. And also, I have to say, well, of course, good job to Max Verstappen, the 18-year-old phenom. Romain Grosjean and Pastor Maldonado both finished the race, 10th and 11th. 10th and 11th, nice and easy going for them. Things are finally starting to quiet down for Pastor Maldonado. Knock on wood.
He had a moment, but he kept it out of the wall today, so...
That's right.
Well done, Pastor.
And lots of people had lots of moments over the weekend.
Right.
Yes. And, of course, we didn't talk about Fernando Alonso yet. He did start the race.
Right. And, you know, he talked about this after the race. So they had an engine issue that they found, I guess, and maybe in their data after qualifying. When the cars are in park permit condition, there's nothing you can do to change it at that point. Or maybe they found it just with not enough time on the clock to be able to do an engine change or component change or didn't have the right parts or whatever. They knew there was a problem with the car and they thought, well, we can either not start the race or we can just start the race and see how long it goes. And so they started the race. How far it went was 3/4 of a lap or so, I think. And then they said, okay, yeah, that issue that we thought was there is still there. I have to retire the car. And that sucks. And then our Will Buxton interviewing Alonso said, oh, that's cool. But, you know, what a great atmosphere here. And Alonso seemed like, yeah, it's great.
So go have a cerveza, hang out with the fans.
Now you can go up in the stands and kind of hang out and get a taco and get a beer. And he's like, no, I'm going to go fly home and try to forget this.
Yeah.
It's like, I will be going to the airport right now and trying to forget this weekend.
Yeah, that was a very unfortunate thing to say on TV. that is not your best moment, I would say, Mr. Alonso.
Well, I still dig Alonso for it's not all corporate speak of like, well, the McLaren Mercedes Johnny Walker team did great, blah, Mercedes McLaren Honda blah blah blah, you know, but to just at least he's saying what he's feeling, and what he's feeling is like, well, this sucks. So, you know, he acknowledged, yeah, this is a great race. Not for me, but that's cool that these people can enjoy it. I'm not going to enjoy it, so I'm off to the airport.
Okay, but what Will was saying was, hey, this is a great atmosphere in general. You are still a Formula One driver. This weekend is still going on. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. You know what I mean? Don't leave it. You know, we've been talking about all podcasts about how incredible the location of the facility is, the facility itself, the fact that it's so high in elevation, the fact that the fans are so raucous and crazy for it, passion everywhere. And he's like, yeah, I just want
to
leave.
Well, yeah, I guess the diplomatic thing to do is say, yeah, totally, I'm going to go join the fans, and then walk off and go to the airport. That's fine. No one's
going to... But no, that's fine.
You know, it's like, you don't actually have to do it, but just, you know, whatever. Say, yeah, I'm saying... Great, Viva Mexico! Woo! And then say,
and I'm saying it's a shame that he didn't genuinely feel like, oh, stick around, hang out, enjoy this place.
I think Fernando's Spanish might actually be even better than Nigel Mansell's. There's a chance.
Well...
He might know more than 2 words.
Yeah, it's...
It's a possibility.
Oh, man, Mansell. That was so great. It really was. I mean...
It's right up there with your burrito, enchilada, cheesy gordita crunch, whatever.
Listen, okay, I did not say that. Oh. That's English, sir. Mm. I just love how Mansell strengthened my argument for Schwarzenegger. I think that's my favorite part about it. I do want to talk about this one more time. Alexander Rossi finished the race in 15th. Will Stevens in 16th, so...
Which, we didn't see much of them, but for a lot of the race, Stevens was in front. So I don't know what happened with Stevens that Rossi got around him.
Yeah, but check this out. So the driver's standings. All right, we've been talking about who's first, second, third, blah, blah, blah. 16th, Jenson Button ahead of his teammate Fernando Alonso in 17th. Marcus Ericsson hanging out for Sauber in 18th. Roberto Meri is in 19th for Marussia/Manor. Alexander Rossi is in 20th, Will Stevens 21st. Rossi is ahead of Will Stevens in the Drivers' Championship.
Right, because of course they both have 0 points, but by best finishing position, that's probably got to be the USGP getting best results for it so far. So I don't know if that...
And I would have to think, I will double check this, but I would have to think that Roberto Meri's result is from Malaysia somewhere early.
Right. I don't remember. I don't know if I could pick up Roberto Meri from a lineup of people. Like, it's just one of those, like, Rossi we care about because he's our American dude, and you know, we've been following his career and you know, we've seen interviews and there's a lot of coverage and stuff. Stevens, I at least, you know what he looks like. He's been in the car all season and whatever, but Roberto Meri, I don't know. It's like, I don't know if I've ever seen that.
I know Meri kind of looks like Felipe Nasser, but a little different, and he drives a Manor.
Oh, well, there you go.
So boom.
And, except for the times that he doesn't.
Right.
He's the guy not driving the Manor Marussia.
Right. And he's never driven a Sauber that I'm aware of.
Okay.
So in 2 weeks' time...
That helps. Yes.
We have the Brazilian Grand Prix.
Right.
The Interlagos circuit. Hopefully the subwoofer competition will be over. Mm-hmm. And not interrupt our Grand Prix. It is one of our favorites. I think that is a brilliant track. And obviously, what's fascinating to see about how this championship closes out is going to be where Vettel finishes, where Raikkonen finishes now, because it's genuinely tight between the two finish drivers. And what we're seeing now is the build-up to how things are going to shift around for 2016. And also, we have possible future announcements and outcomes to come from what's happening with Red Bull. Red Bull still does not have an engine deal for next year.
Yeah, there have been more talks of the Honda thing, even though Ron Dennis and McLaren says they vetoed that. I think there's still some stuff with Honda saying, well, we're looking at options. So,
and that Honda motor is definitely improving. Because this is a big straightaway track. This would be the place to show Honda's weaknesses. And that they were right there. Like, Jenson Button did not make it into Q2, but you know, his time was 1.3 seconds off, and the guy that got in was 1.2. Like, it was right there. It wasn't some far off piece of kit. They are nudging forward with that motor. then Jensen Button did get a 50 grid spot penalty.
I think at some point it was actually up as high as 70 places.
It was not fair that Jensen had to start, in parking lot F and make his way. I'm sorry. What's the point of that?
Yeah. He actually had to start at Circuit of the Americas and drive to the Mexican Grand Prix and then get in the traffic, as we said, is not good.
Nope. Very tough. Yeah.
Good. Not great times.
But anyway, my point is that there's still a lot to come with these final two races, despite the fact that both the Constructors and Drivers' Championship has been decided. And also, it's going to be very interesting to see if Rosberg continues his upward swing of tightening up things and proving that he is not just some, also ran number two guy. Because he's not. He really isn't.
Well, he kind of is.
He kind of is. But he has the potential to be not that.
Okay. It's not necessarily his destiny to always be number two guy. But for the last few years, he's been number two guy.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we can all agree on that. Because this race was on a reasonable time zone for us, we were doing a very sort of minimal amount, but we were following along with the TweeterNet, and I would like to thank those taking part on hashtag FWCars. Hopefully we can do so again for the Brazilian race. So all the usual suspects are in there. Colin Sato, Bernie A, Robin Warner, Joao Cunha. We got Tim Meekins is in there. Anyway, a whole bunch of people. Ziggy was even going because he's calling in from Australia. So that's, it's probably Wednesday in Australia.
And Ziggy was like, hey, are you guys around? Yeah, no, Ziggy was good peeps, man.
Right. So my daughter is at an age where she's able to run around all over the room, but also she really loves the idea of a computer and hitting buttons on it and seeing the screen light up. So if we're out watching the race and I've got my computer, she is like, it's like moths to a flame, man. She is all over that trying to steal it from me and all that. And, so that does make live tweeting difficult because she will take it and run with it. And I don't know what she'll tweet, but I'm trying not to let that be a thing or also have her just destroy my computer. So there's, different challenges and different stages of life. And sometimes it's staying up super late and waking up early and going to work. And sometimes it's, keeping your computer from being destroyed by a little person. So either way, always good to take part where and when we can for this race. And, Taste of the Race Mexico edition is always lovely.
And in addition to tasting this race, we also did predict for this race.
Yes.
And some of us predicted a little bit more logically than others.
How'd that go for you?
I predicted with passion, sir. I predicted with passion and with will and with spirit.
And with vettel.
This is what I want to see right now. I want to see who beat who. Was it me or Brian Hoover?
So Brian Hoover, Steven Stevens, 31 points. You had 19 points. Will Carver with Button, 32 points. So the Stevens was not the worst. Button was 1 point farther back than Stevens at the end of the day. Because they both finished the race, but with, with the starting positions, with the 70 grid spots and all that, Button was dead last. So you, sir, moved down by a 24 passionate spots. In the total.
Wow, results. Will Carver, man, you had such a good run at the USGP because I think it was totals, but something like 17 points. He really did because Button finished sixth.
Yeah.
And it was a great run for him. And he qualified not great, but not terrible either. I mean, yeah, that's a bummer.
Sorry, it's 21 passionate points that you lost. So you, sir, are 93rd in the overall standings with 85 points. I am just barely at the bottom. I moved down one place today because a couple more people had predicted because it was Rosberg. Rosberg was the actual result. I was ham. So anyone who had one Rosberg and one Hamilton, either way around, doesn't matter, would have beat me. Or if anyone actually predicted Rosberg, and if you did. So.
And congratulations to Craig Wilson, Paul Bryant. Oh boy.
Ryoji Itakura.
Itakura. Yes.
Tim Meekins and Ian Greenstreet.
Yes.
For predicting Rosberg correctly. But.
And apologies to Mr. Itakura for my poor pronunciation.
So still a 24-way tie for second place in the overall prediction standing. But number one, Nils Erlemo, still out there on his own with 36 points. So well done to for doing that.
Frickin' Damien, man. Ugh, that's frustrating.
Right. So two races to go. Next one is Brazil. Time to make good on your predictions and go.
I am going to change my prediction.
Okay.
I'm going to put Lewis Hamilton on pole and Lewis Hamilton to win the race. I think he was just a little bit calmer from having won the Drivers' World Championship for a third time and second time in a row and calmed down. And Rosberg totally jumped on that. And Lewis is not going to let that happen two times in a row. Or is he? I'm predicting no. And I'm going to say he's on the pole and going to win the race.
I will slightly disagree with you, even though my previous prediction was Hamilton. I am going to say that Lewis Hamilton will be on pole, but that Nico Rosberg will win the Brazilian Grand Prix.
You're going to flip that there switch, are you?
Yep, the switch has been flipped, and I am in there for predictions. So, man, we had a lot to cover, and not even all that crazy much about the race, but good times. Glad to see Mexico is back on the calendar. Already looking forward to the Mexican Grand Prix 2016. And who knows, man, if I can somehow manage a way to get there in person or something, that would be, I mean, you got to imagine that. I mean, there's like parties going on right now. There's all kinds of festivities.
Yeah, but you remember.
Think of all the street tacos.
Okay. Austin is 1,400 miles away.
Yeah.
Mexico City is 750 miles away from that.
Yeah.
Which means, Mexico City is just as far away as Los Angeles. And I imagine that plane tickets are more expensive, not less. So start saving.
Yeah, well, but there's direct flights. Whatever. Mexico City is a great place to go anyway. And that's actually part of what I haven't mentioned, but it's exciting for me about this, is I've been to Mexico a handful of times. I really dig it, and it definitely has sort of a weird reputation in the rest of the world. And so it's cool to have any kind of positive, a bunch of people that wouldn't otherwise have cool, positive thoughts about Mexico to be able to see the country and see that, hey, there's lots of cool, smart, passionate people here that are really excited about racing. And it's a place that, people don't often think about as a sweet place to go, but I think it is. So it's cool to get some global exposure in a positive way for it. Of course, this is like, the Top Gear stuff with Richard Hammond and everybody making fun of Mexico and everybody kind of pile-along and like, oh, yeah, Mexico, it's a bunch of, it's a really crappy place and why would anybody want to go there? And, nobody knows anything about cars or whatever. And that's not true. And it's cool to let the world see that. So, I think it's a cooler place to go than Los Angeles, but that's just me. And
hold on. I'm not trying to compare the two culturally as an interesting going.
Well, what do you mean by plane tickets then?
I think that a plane ticket to Mexico City is going to be a lot more expensive than a plane ticket to Los Angeles, California. And the distance is the same. Is. Yes. I am in no way. I have to say, I did not realize before we started talking about Mexican Grand Prix that it was a freaking mile and a half above sea level. To me, that's really fascinating. That adds a whole new culture to the place, because I was expecting 100 degrees and humid all the time and all this kind of stuff. And I imagine this time of year, it's not even close to that.
Yeah, and definitely partly because of the high altitude and the dry air being closer to the equator and all that, it cools down a lot, like at night and all that. There's definitely some chilly evenings there. So it's a whole different thing and a super cool place to go. And I hope to go there again sometime soon. So I was in Brazil all this week while the Mexican Grand Prix buildup and stuff was happening. So I was, it was interesting, talking to people about, there's, of course, in Brazil, a huge F1 following. There are major highways named after Ayrton Senna. There's all kinds, going on. It's just like, even if I didn't know anything about F1 or Ayrton Senna or anything, it's just part of that culture. And it's to a lesser extent in Mexico, but I feel like this is helpful to, I guess even though, last time I was in Mexico, I did see Checo's face on billboards and stuff, mostly around Telcel, cell phone ads and stuff. But it's just, when it's just part of the culture that, even if you don't know anything about it, the fact that you're seeing these people's faces and you're seeing these people's names around is super cool. And anyway, hopefully it's something that, continues to go on and do well. And I'm not, quite as passionate about, the European Grand Prix in Azerbaijan and stuff like that. But I understand that, things happen and deals need to be made.
But you do need to go to Spa.
Yeah.
That place is incredible. I was there for not a Formula One race, but a Blancpain endurance series race, and that track's just so phenomenal. Such a beautiful place. Oh my god, in Suzuka we have places to go.
There's plenty of cool places to go.
Yeah,
I think
Mexico is one of them.
That's right.
There you go.
There you have it. Put a bow on it nicely there, sir. Thank you. So thank you to you for listening. As always, you can always visit funwithcars.com, where there are links to our Twitter page and Facebook and all that. You can send us email to feedback@funwithcars.com. And it's, of course, always fun to have people comment on the shows on the Facebook page and send tweets at us and let us know what you think. thoughts, agreements, disagreements, and so on. Thank you to Jamie Price for recording and sending us audio, and we look forward to sharing more airtime with you in the future, because that's
huge.
Always
thank
fun
you to Jamie Price. It was great to hear.
To get a good perspective on that. I am Jim Lau. Thank you for listening.
And I'm Robin Warner. We'll see you in Brazil.